You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome to episode 45 of our podcast, Mind Over Markets. Today, I'm going to do something different. Mark is not with me in this studio. You know, Mark went on a little bit of a vacation. I didn't give birth, but I'm a new father now to a beautiful baby boy, and I had some time off. And so things are discombobulated, but today I'm going to do a solo cast and talk to you guys about 9 lessons that I learned being a trader at a big bank in Canada, and ultimately why I left that career. So it's going to be an exciting episode. I really look forward to delivering this information to you. Stay tuned. It's going to be exciting. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about TradePro Academy and what we do. At TradePro, our biggest resource and asset is our community. Every single day, we connect with traders around the world to communicate, discuss trade ideas, setups, and to profit and learn together. When you're a professional trader, you need to be around professional traders, and that's what we have going at TradePro Academy. Sign up and check us out. We have courses on futures trading, options trading, currencies, and much more. I look forward to seeing you in the community and introducing you to our other successful traders and your new winning team. Now let's jump right into this episode. First, I want to apologize if audio sounds a little bit different. I'm doing this from my home studio, and we're still going to have fun. So let me tell you about very quickly how I got into being a trader at a big bank to begin with. All right, my parents immigrated from Eastern Europe in the early 90s, and as a young kid, you know, I really wanted to start earning money. I wanted to be independent from a very young age. I had a paper route. I remember riding my bike around, throwing papers, you know, and I'd get up every Sunday morning to do it. When I was a little bit older and in my early teen years, I got a cleaning job that I remember driving around cleaning corporate offices. I literally started by cleaning toilets, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. So we'd go to the office work, and obviously, you know, there's seniority in that game as well. I would do the dirtiest of work, and I would do it with pride and happiness, knowing that, you know, this is just a temporary stop in my journey to where I'm really trying to go. And funny enough, then I got into furniture installation and moving business in my late teen years and early 20s, like really early 20s. All right. And I actually installed the furniture in the trading desk of Scotia Capital. All right. And Scotia Capital is a division, the capital markets division of Scotia Bank in Canada. It's a really big bank here. It's one of the top 6. It's a huge bank in terms of international. They have a big Caribbean presence for retail banking. And really, they had a strong bullion network also. They were one of the big bullion dealers on the London Metals Exchange. But, you know, they got in a lot of trouble for that and some lawsuits. But nonetheless, you know, I digress a little bit. I was building the office furniture for Scotia Capital, and underneath the desk of the director, right, because I knew this was kind of the important seat of the whole trading floor, I scratched my initials underneath with a screwdriver in a place that they couldn't see it, sort of thing. And I kid you not, years later, I went for an interview with the director, and I said, "You want to hear something really cool? I put my initials underneath that desk." It's crazy. It's one of those stories that, you know, really reminds me of what it's like to have a visualization, to have an idea, and how to manifest what you want. All right, so how did I get into Scotia Bank? You know, let's take it back to the beginning. I went to school for financial planning. I wanted to learn about markets. I didn't really learn anything in school that helped me as a trader. I was still trading while I was in school. I've been trading since 2001. All right, I was trading while I was at school, but I wasn't learning anything to help my trading get better. In fact, my trading was helping pay for school. And so one of the biggest things that happened to me, though, one of the biggest opportunities out of school was to get an internship at Scotia Bank as a customer service representative. Job was known as a CSR. And I got this job in 2009. All right, this was after the whole carnage had happened. We'd seen the lows at the time, but the selling was still fierce. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of fear in the marketplace. And I was doing customer service at the time, taking phone calls that were super dark. Right. And I remember those phone calls very well. And they really formed the basis of why I'm in this business to begin with. All right. And then through the years, it took me about 2 years or so, and I worked my way up to the trading desk. I became a licensed equities trader with Scotia Bank. I remember my ID is S1A. It's really funny. Every trader has an ID code that they put in to the platform. We actually used AS400 for the trades. All right. And very old platform. All right. And so I remember my code. And when I became a professional trader, when I finally got licensed, you know, it was such a process. There was a 30-day licensing requirement that I had to do. There was a 6-hour compliance interview. Literally any question you could think of was being asked, and was asked in a way that, like, it's time sensitive. He was putting pressure on me. I remember my compliance director at the time was Dan, you know, really interesting guy, like dry humor, but very nice once you get to know him. Perfect guy for compliance. So he's asking me all these questions for 6 hours straight. And then halfway through the 3-hour mark of that interview before you could get licensed, he goes, "Hey, do you want to take a break?" 3 hours into it, he asked me if I want to take a break. It was a very intense process, all right? And that's what you had to do to get licensed. You had to pass some courses, you had to do this interview, and then you would finally be minted as a trader, as a licensed trader that could go on the desk and start taking client calls and client order flow, all right? To me, that happened in 2012, all right? That was the year that really 2011 was the year that I became licensed. And if you actually go online, you could find my registration. You could see that I was licensed. You have to search in the Canadian database, and you have to put in the historical archives and not the active, because I'm not licensed anymore. But from 2011 to 2016, for 5 years, you know, I was a licensed trader. As a licensed trader, I worked a few different roles, right? One of them was taking trades on the phone, all right? And you're going to, through the lessons I share with you in this podcast, so you're going to learn what I discovered about being a professional trader and how it's super misleading, all right, of what you actually do. But from 2011 to 2016, I held a license. I also got my derivatives and options requirements. I was licensed in all provinces, and, you know, it was fun. I took client trades. I put them into the market. The kind of trading we did wasn't, hey, you know, here's a stock you need to buy, all right? And I'll talk about this in the podcast, how this whole industry is really just sales, right? It was mind-blowing to me to learn that what I'd really be doing at the pinnacle of this is just selling trade ideas to clients. I didn't want to do that. That's what advisors did. That's really the trading that a lot of clients do. But this, the other trading that I was doing at the trading desk was self-directed orders for clients. So a client would call up and they would say, "Hey, George, you know, I want to buy 100 shares of Apple at, I don't know, at the time, let's say $80 per share, right?" And then I'd read back the order, put it in their account, make sure they had enough margin, make sure whatever options plays they had didn't interfere, but make sure their account was in good standing, they had enough cash. And then I'd read back the order and I'd put it through to the market and transact it for them. So it was a really fun role in which I learned a lot about the markets. I learned a lot about how to put trades in and the semantics of it. But what I really did learn the most about is the retail trader and their mindset, all right, and how it differs from professional traders. At the same time, as, you know, we're doing trades for the clients, we're also doing our own trades. And one of the downsides I'll talk about is the fact that when you are a licensed trader, your trade goes to the market last, you're last in line, and how that could impact you. All right, so it's a really exciting episode. I'm really happy. That's kind of the history of my story. If you guys want to learn more about that story, check out my book on Amazon. It was a bestseller in the online trading space, and it also hit bestseller in, I think, investing temporarily. We beat out some big books with that book launch. All right, we beat out books like Michael Lewis's Flash Boys. We beat them in sales for a couple days straight, and it was great. So we got a number one selling best book. Check it out. It's called Path to Profit by me, yours truly, George Papasoff. Go on Amazon. Have a gander at it. It's $23. It's got 18 reviews in Canada right now with 5-star rating. So, you know, anywho, I talk about the full story there. Let's get into 9 reasons and lessons I had from my 7-year career in trading at Scotiabank, and ultimately why I left. All right, you guys know TradePro Academy loves having lists. Here's another list for you. And, you know, I feel like we need Mark to keep me in line. I just looked at it. We're almost 10 minutes in. I haven't gotten into the lessons. 9 lessons. Lesson number 1. Let's do this. Here's the first lesson that I learned. I was excited about being a trader, but the average person who you meet doesn't know what you're going to do as a trader. They don't know what a trader does. They know that you're involved in the business of money, so they automatically assume you make a lot of money, all right? But you really are kind of isolated. You're siloed out. It's not like if you're an accountant and you tell somebody, I'm an accountant, they know what that is, and they say, oh, cool. Maybe they don't know what the profession is, but they know what you do as an accountant. They have at least a little bit of a general understanding. Most people know zero about trading. So you really kind of have an isolation in terms of your social circle, and you associate and hang out more with colleagues. That's who you really only relate with, all right? And then your life becomes, you know, you're all working and hanging out with work friends and being friends with work colleagues and working with friends outside of work. It just becomes a mess. And this is one of the things that I found very interesting. Very few people know what I did. And even though I was trading on my own account and I was handling client orders, people would ask me, oh, so you're a trader. Yeah. Oh, wow, man, you must make a ton of money. No, the salary for traders at the time was $50,000, right? There isn't a lot of money in this business on the professional side, all right? There isn't a proprietary firm, but there are very few of these that exist. So they would assume, hey, you must make a lot of money, which is a fun assumption at the bar when you're single. But, you know, internally, you know that you could have so much more profit if you trade on your own account. We'll talk about that in a second, all right? So what I learned was the average person doesn't know what a trader does. And the way that impacts you is it's a little bit lonely at times. And if you're going to switch careers out of trading and people look at your resume, you're really going to have to do a lot of work to explain to them what it is that you actually do. And you'll get a lot of these. Oh, you trade? Yeah. What do you think about XYZ company? It's a small miner in on the Australian exchange, the ASX. What do you think of it? You know the CEO there? You know what they do? You know his name, the Brian guy? It's like, no, I don't. Not really. I don't know all the stocks globally. There's over 100,000 of them. So anywho, that's number one thing that I learned is that most people don't know what you do, and there is benefits and downfalls to that. Okay. Number two, or the second lesson that I learned, is that having the ability to look at people's accounts and do trades on their accounts, I realized that rich people don't always make money. All right. And that's something that you look at and you say, oh, well, these rich people must continue making money. The rich get richer, you know, the poor get poorer, that kind of thing, the Robin Hood theory. But I will tell you this, people who had large accounts didn't always grow their account or continuously growing their account. A lot of them had massive accounts, but they were donors. They would give to the market and continue to refund or to refresh and reload their balance. But here's what was interesting, all right? Not all of them, obviously. Even though the people who had wealth already didn't make money always in the market, they did tend to be better investors for the long term, all right? When I discussed with them, they would understand more about the market as a whole because they know business, right? If you have a large amount of money in your account to trade with, right, you're probably somebody who has either had an acquisition in your business or if you've come across some wealth in some way, all right? Could be inheritance, could be selling your business assets, could be that you're doing really good in your business at the moment and you got extra cash and you want to put it to work. They did make better investors. I'll tell you this, but anywho, I dealt with a lot of high net worth clients and, you know, I helped them with their trades. We had a little bit of discussion, et cetera. And here's what I learned. Rich people don't always make money in their accounts, but they make better investors because they have a rich mindset. They have a rich mentality. They're people who understand the dynamic of trading off risk with the prospect of earning reward, right? They also tended to be a little bit more emotionally together, right? They wouldn't allow losses to deviate them from their approach, and they wouldn't be too excited about gains, right? Everything that happened seemed like it was expected. It was very interesting. That was one of the biggest things for me, is learning how to interact with and the personas, if you will, of really wealthy people. We had some extremely wealthy people that I traded for. That in fact, you know, I can't even mention some of them because they had protected identities because they're people of political power or people of interest, you know, publicly. That was interesting, all right? The other thing I learned about the wealthy people is the accounts that had the most amount of money would call the least amount. You'd never hear from them. Sometimes we'd have to call them and be like, hey, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, are you okay? I haven't heard from you. The people that have $1,000 in their account were calling daily. I want to get my fee waived. You know, $9.99 is way too much commission. And, you know, they would take up 90% of the time, the people with the smallest account balances. So that to me was interesting. All right, lesson number three that I learned about from Scotiabank as a trader is that retail investors have great ideas and bad timing. Right? If you think about it, a retail investor has the most powerful information. What is that? They're connected to the front line. What does a corporation do? A company produces some kind of product and sells it to the end user, the consumer, and then generates hopefully a profit after paying for all their expenses once the sale is complete, right? That's the idea of what the economy is running on. The economy is just a bunch of businesses who hope to, after clear expenses, have profit left over for themselves, the shareholder, and stakeholders, right? But the interesting thing about retail investors was that they were the frontline consumer. You know, a lot of the accounts I was talking to at Scotiabank were people who were the everyday, you know, the average person. I mean, we're all great, but average meaning, you know, they have a 9-to-5 job, they have a savings account for their retirement, you know, they have a house, a family, et cetera. They're just kind of the middle class, all right? And the middle class is the one that consumes a lot of the everyday products, all right? It's a lot of purchasing power that's out there. 80% of GDP in the U.S. is based on consumption. So these retail traders who have so many touch points with the end products, right, were not able to make investment decisions. They would do the research to purchase things that made more sense for them, right? They would know things like, you shouldn't buy this hockey stick. You know, the XD, whatever other model is way better for these five reasons. But when it comes time to stocks, for some reason, they would blank out, all right? They would follow advice of people who advertise themselves to be advisors. I want to follow up my financial advisor's advice. I'm going to give you some advice of my own on that from my experience in the industry to say, you know, I'm going to just get a financial advisor and I'm going to just follow because I don't know anything about the markets. And to me, it was mind blowing because I would say, look, I remember saying this on calls that were monitored. People would tell me, I remember our call monitor, actually, I remember her name, Kyla, too. She said, George, you know, you're being too nice and friendly with them. Get on with the next call. They were kind of pushing me to pump calls. But what I would tell them is, look, you know, you're the end user of the product, right? Do you like the company? Do you like what you're paying for? If you, let's say, for example, you're buying coffee and Starbucks is the product. Are you drinking more Starbucks today than you were 6 months ago, right? Are your friends drinking more and your colleagues in your circle? If the answer is yes, the company has more sales. Investing doesn't need to be any more sophisticated or complicated than that. So when you looked at retail investors having these great ideas, being the driving engine of the economy, all right, on a national, on a global scale, that's what pumps markets up, or people purchasing items, all right? But when it came time to investing, they were very emotional and they would allow other people to make financial decisions on their behalf. It broke my heart, all right? They would buy the top consistently and they would sell the low because of emotion. And because they would outsource knowledge, they'll say, hey, you know, I don't have time to learn about this. I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time, right? So many limiting decisions that I encountered in that job with the retail investor. And for those limiting decisions, what they decided to do is outsource that. Now think about this. We work so hard for our money, right? We make our money, then we pay tax. Right. And then we go out and spend money and pay sales tax after we've paid income tax. All right. Then we pay the insurance, the mortgage, the car payments, all right, electricity, water bills, internet bills. You guys don't need help with that. You know your expenses. We got so many expenses, and at the end we get to save a little bit and we put it aside and we say, this is it. This is our nest egg. You know, this is how I'm gonna leave my legacy. And then you take that nest egg and give it to some average Joe who just uses a whole bunch of fancy terms to confuse you to manage it for you. How much do you think he cares about that money? All right, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. But investors, retail investors, have great ideas and terrible timing. And I'll never forget that because to this day, it kind of drives my mentality. I look at the market and I say, where are the retail investors? Because wherever retail is, all right, wherever retail is going to lose the most amount of money is where the markets end up going. It's sad. And, you know, I really kind of, after I quit Scotiabank, I've dedicated myself to helping the everyday person succeed in markets. All right. And I have a lot of stories and lessons from this. But overall, they got terrible timing. All right. So let's look at number four. All right. Most investors trade on news outlets. Number four, the fourth lesson I learned out of nine from my seven-year career in the trading department. All right. Retail investors trade on news outlets. And I knew it because I also was a trader. One of the reasons I looked for the job that I ended up getting is because I said, hey, you know what? I could just trade on my own account while I'm trading anyways. So why not? Right? It makes sense. Nobody could get mad at me for looking at the screens and the markets. That's my passion because I have to do it anyways to kind of help the clients out that we had at the time. More on this topic later, by the way. And I knew from the fact that I was reading so much news, you know, you guys probably don't realize this, but since about, you know, early college, my first year of college, spend about 2 hours a day reading news, reports, economic articles. I have a whole bunch of subscriptions I pay for. It's an information business. And once you figure out how to trade successfully, it's not over. That's how you trade successfully today. But for tomorrow, for you to succeed, you got to invest your time and energy today in improving. So I'm constantly reading things. And because I'm reading these reports in the media, which, by the way, never work out the way the media says it. It's always contrarian. If the media says it's time to buy, like Jim Cramer, remember? He was like, it's time to buy Lehman Brothers. No, Lehman Brothers didn't work out too well. And so you look at a lot of the news outlets out there, and I would actually read the information in the morning. So I look at CNBC said that, for example, Microsoft is a good buy because it's upgraded by these four analysts. And then sure enough, like without fail, the phone rings. I sit down at the desk, have my coffee, you know, look at a picture of me and my girlfriend time. You know, I've been with her for a long time. And sit at the desk, stretch a little bit, do a little Zen meditation. And I'm like, all right, let's dial in. Let's take some calls in the queue. The phone would ring. Sure enough, somebody would say, hey, George, is that what your name is, George? All right, hey, George, this is Gary. I'd like to buy some Microsoft. All right, Gary, how many shares? 100. All right, what's the price? We're going to limit you in. Let's go. All right, Gary, you got the fill. Congratulations. Have a great day. Hang up the phone. Hey, George, it's Steve. What do you think of that Microsoft? All right. And you'll see, you'll hear these calls. And to me, it was just mind blowing. It's like, look, I know they're trading on the media because I'm seeing it happen. All right. And we'd actually read these same reports. All right. And we'd know the market flow right before it happened. We'd know what symbols we'd have to be kind of putting in for the day. To me, that was mind blowing because I knew it didn't work. And if you pulled up those charts 2 weeks later, sure enough, those people were down on the investments. But again, that goes back to, look, you work so hard for your money. You know what's best for you and your family when you're choosing your career. But for some reason, when you have the net earnings of a career after expenses, you trust that kind of lifeblood of your survival to someone else. All right. And that someone else is CNBC. All right. And you know, that really made me sad, to be honest with you guys. During those times, they weren't good times. I was looking at it and like, look, I know that what they're doing in this order I'm putting in will probably lose. I don't know 100%, because if I knew that they were going to lose on the Microsoft trade, I'd be short. All right. I wouldn't be there if I knew what was going to happen. I wouldn't be here if I knew what was going to happen in the market. We all take educated guesses, not guesses, but we do our homework and we take high probability trades. And so anyways, we could see that they were trading based on news and it never, ever worked out. And all that would happen is the book would churn. In a couple months, it would no longer be, you know, Steve and Gary. It would be like Larry and Michael. And then once Larry and Michael blew out, it would be like Joe and, I don't know, Jesse and so on. And that from that perspective, the business got a little bit dark. I'm not going to lie to you guys. All right, let's go to the next lesson I learned. All right, lesson number five. Professional trading doesn't mean what you think it does. And I think this is a very important topic that we're going to kind of unpack a little bit. All right, when you think about becoming a professional trader, what do you think about? All right, somebody who's extremely successful, somebody who's got laser focus, amazing discipline, somebody that you want to be like. Right? Somebody that has access to information you don't and you wish you could, even if you had the money you couldn't access. All right? Somebody is just above you in every single way. Right? That's what we think of as a professional trader, somebody we idolize and want to be. professional trading absolutely stinks. Professional trading, unless, so look, we got to distinguish professional trading. There are different types of pros. You're considered a pro if you have access to market information, so stock data. All right, it's a news feed, not a news feed, but stock market data is what I'm trying to say. And the moment you're involved in a brokerage, right, and you have some kind of inside access, you're considered to be a pro. That's what a professional trader does. And what professional means is you're trading other people's money, not yours, in every single situation except proprietary trading. Now, proprietary trading is dead. It hasn't really been around a very long time. And the reason being is the capital markets are open to anyone. You now have the same information, the same news sources without a delay and the same software and tools as prop traders did in the 90s. All right. There is no more advantage being part of a prop firm. The only advantage is the people there, being able to learn and be trained by star traders and be in that group. But that's exactly what TradePro Academy is doing. We became an online proprietary firm without giving traders capital that would come in with their own money. Truth is, you don't need somebody's money these days. Leverage is good. And if you have a good strategy, good discipline, all right, there's no need to prop trade. That's why these prop firms nowadays aren't really true prop firms. A true prop firm doesn't want you to put your money down, all right? A true prop firm doesn't make you pay monthly. They do, but it's as a result of your profit. If you don't have a profit, you won't get paid. You don't have to pay, but you'll be gone very quickly too. So that's other side of professional trading, is either a prop firm or everything else. Investment banking, working at a brokerage, all right, being a broker, being an advisor, et cetera, that puts you as a pro. So here's the downsides of being a professional trader. You got to You got to pre-clear your personal trades a lot of the time, especially if you're in investment banking. There's blackout periods. All right. If you're not in investment banking, if you're working on the trading desk like I did, all right, you obviously have to prioritize customer orders. If a customer calls and you're on your phone trying to put an order, back then there weren't even, like, trading on your mobile was just becoming a thing when I worked at the trading desk. So if you wanted to trade, you had to have your own account open on your work computer. But if a call came in, there was no misconception on whose trade you're going to do first. All right. Client first. That's your legal obligation. Secondarily, even if the client and your order hit the book at the same time, all right, let's say it arrives at 1 p.m. Eastern time to buy 100 shares of Microsoft, you, and 100 shares of the client. Who gets filled first? The client, every single time. As a pro trader, you always end up at the back of the book. You get put at the end of the line. You might be the first in line based on how market dynamic works, but you end up getting filled last. You always go last in the queue, all right, from all your clients in the firm. That's important. Not enough could take out your edge if you're doing a lot of more sophisticated order flow stuff. Also, as a professional trader in the industry, compliance reviews all your accounts. You got a compliance officer in your business looking through stuff, all right, deciding whether or not what you're doing is too risky, if you're trading too often. If you do a couple of trades a day, they could say, hey, well, what about the client orders? How did you have time to do these trades when you should have been working? All right, so many people are in your business because why? If you're a professional trader, somebody is paying you to trade on their behalf. And that somebody wants to make sure you're trading for them, not against them. All right. So that was the difference between kind of the perception of, oh, this guy's a professional trader. I was a professional trader. And guess what? It's not that glorious. In fact, for a professional trader, other than prop trading, obviously, which is, you know, you're using firm capital to generate profits. But a professional trader basically means you're not trading for yourself. And I'll tell you this, it wasn't uncharacteristic to see licensed traders at our desk that didn't trade their own account. They had no interest to fill their own orders or to even grow their own capital. To me, that was mind-boggling. I'd say a good half of the traders that were licensed had an interest in markets, but didn't invest themselves regularly and weren't really good investors to begin with. They were making the same mistakes the retail guys were doing, all right? And so being a professional trader doesn't make you a good trader. I remember a lot of times because remember I said, as a trader, your friends are going to be people who you work with because you kind of get along with them. and you understand each other. So a lot of the times when we go out, the mistakes I'm hearing being made are emotional mistakes. Why are they emotional? It's one thing to trade somebody else's money. It's another thing to trade your own. Professional traders oftentimes are hired and work at firms because they can't really cut it for themselves. And that's just the truth. All right. That's just the honest truth. I'm telling you this from my own experience. All right. If you could trade for yourself, because here's the thing about trading for yourself. You got to learn, you got to leave a nice cushy job with benefits. All right. You have to leave the security of the 9-to-5, because even professional traders are 9-to-5 employees, right? Some days they work longer. You got to give up so much of what society has built expectations around from you that's the biggest risk that most people perceive to take in their life. They don't realize that, hey, you're going to just work as a trader till you're 40 and then the firm's going to downsize and you're gone. All right. I think that's the biggest risk, is somebody else controlling your future and your family's well-being. To me, there's no bigger risk than that. And so, you know, I remember this very clearly, knowing that as soon as I got my license and I became a trader at a bank, you know, and spent some time doing it and learning the industry, I realized that was one of the reasons I didn't want to really do it anymore. It wasn't as attractive as it sounded, you know, from the other side of the counter. And what I mean by that is, when you're at the bar, you know, you're either telling somebody you're a trader or somebody's telling it to you. And so when somebody's saying, yeah, I work at, like, I'm a trader at, I don't know, BMO Harris, or I'm a trader for a broker here in this firm, you look at that and you're like, wow, how can I be like you? And then when I became that person on the other side of the bar, I was unsatisfied, because all I had to do every single day is work with people who didn't really want to trade their own money as much. There were a few guys, don't get me wrong. You know, I was definitely in the circle of people that we would kind of go in the morning and we'd know all the news and we went above and beyond their job. But for the most part, you're working for a machine, and that machine just chews and chops traders up, retail people, people who have, you know, strong family values, strong foundations, and you're just seeing them get hurt over and over and over again. All right. The performance is the same. All right. The market fluctuations are the same. The emotions behind it's the same. All right. Just the only thing that changes is the names, you know, and it really got kind of dark for me. I didn't really enjoy that. Okay. Here's the next lesson I learned, which is kind of connected to it. Trading, 99% of trading jobs are sales jobs. Right. And I'm pretty sure that you hear that and you kind of look towards the radio as you're driving or whatever you're doing when you listen to this podcast. Like, wait, what? Say that again. 99% of trading jobs are sales jobs. All right. What you're doing is trading on behalf of a client. You are not the source of the money. You are the transaction, if that makes sense. You're not coming to the table with your own money. You're trading client money, OPM, other people's money. So here's the interesting thing. Most bank trading jobs are trading customer order flow. All right. These high net worth clients, when they said they have a financial advisor, the way this works is, all right, you have a wealth management department at the bank, and at the wealth management department, these people would be called brokers or financial advisors or whatever you want to call them. They would have teams. And so each team within that wealth management arm has their own book of clients. You could sell your book of clients to other financial advisors for millions of dollars, all right? And so you have these different teams who have accumulated their own clients, and if they go to another bank, they could try to get compensated. I remember talking to a guy who was proud of this. I'm not going to mention his name or anything, but he was proud of the fact that, like, I hop every 3 years. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I go to a different bank with my client book. I get myself a $750,000 signing bonus. And then 3 years later, I take my clients to another broker. And I'm like, well, how do your clients do? And he's like, I don't really care. Didn't you hear the number? You know, it was sickening. So it's like, it's a sales job for the most part. And these brokers that you talk to, so remember how we have different wealth management teams. So you're going to call one of those wealth management teams. You're going to say, hey, you know, I need some financial advice. What are they going to tell you? Well, let me look at your stocks, Larry. Oh, well, you know what? I don't really like your composition or portfolio. We're heading into, a high interest environment. Let's keep it real. We're going to head into a low interest environment, Larry. So you should probably think about getting some bonds, because they're going to go up as rates are low. And so Larry goes, okay, let me buy some bonds. Say, but Larry, you don't have cash. We're going to have to sell some of your Apple. Okay, great, Mr. Advisor. Let's do it. I get off the phone. Trader puts the trade. It goes through. Let me explain to you what just happened. All right. Larry got screwed. The financial advisor that he called on the wealth management side, how did they get their trade ideas? Right. They go to the analyst desk of the bank. So these analysts put these reports together and recommendations and ideas. And it is the financial advisor or the broker's job to sell these analysts report ideas to their customers to generate trades. The brokers get paid on commissionable trades. It's called DARTs, daily average revenue trades. The more DARTs you have, the more money you're going to make in your business, the more commission you're going to be paid. So it isn't the incentive of the broker to help Larry build his portfolio. It's the incentive of the broker to help Larry put in as many trades as possible. You could have just said, hey, Larry, do you have some capital sitting around to get these bonds? No, you got to sell Apple to buy the bonds. Now you have a double-sided trade. You're double-ending it, all right? And this was the job, and this was kind of where I was being pushed in my career to seek. Look, nobody pushes me. Let me tell you this. In this career, nobody's going to push you, but it's all internal. This was the next step for me. People from my from the trading desk, from my current position at the time, would go on to do these things. And I absolutely hated that. I looked at that and said, you know, that's, as an idea, you know, it sounds good, you know, fantastic. You get career progression, but now you're just selling analyst reports to clients to generate commissionable trades. That was kind of the business behind it. The other place you go is investment banking, if you wanted to go there. I didn't have the education for investment banking. I immigrated to Canada in the early 90s. I was a big hustler. I worked hard, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that we would put into my own development. I didn't get good grades. I could never pay attention in school long enough to really focus and be interested. While the teachers are talking about certain concepts, I was thinking about how do I get to a level where I could employ these teachers. I didn't want to be the part of the system. I wanted to create my own system. So anywho, I could never get into investment banking. You know, I had a lot of friends that did it, that got into it. And I see how that played out. A lot of them are burned out these days, you know, spending 80-hour weeks every single, for years at a time. And so investment banking pays well, but it pays you because you're depleting your youth at a much higher rate than normal. All right. And if you look at it, it's probably a $10 an hour job if you put in the time you're actually, what your compensation is and the time you're putting in. I remember I was out with a couple of the trader buddies and we went to a bar and we found a wallet. And the wallet was to an investment banking guy. And I called them. It was like 11:30 p.m. And I'm like, hey, man, I found your wallet. I got your business card. He's like, oh, crap. Thanks, man. I was just downstairs like 40 minutes ago getting a drink. I'll come get it from you. I'm like, oh, you live around here? He's like, no, I'm still at work. So we see the guy. And I'm like, hey, man, I want to stay for a beer and hang out. He's like, no, I got to get back to work. This was a Friday. The guy just came from the bar, went right back to the office, got his wallet once he realized he lost it, and went back to work. You know, so I look at that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you this, the professional side of the trading business is a sales job. It's not that sexy at all, right? When you say professional trader, you know, 99% of that is people who work for selling clients trade ideas, right? They're generating commissionable trades and everyone else works for that, right? That's kind of the whole model. The incentive is to turn over the book. I really didn't like that aspect of it. I knew I didn't want to go into the wealth management arm, right? And I knew it kind of capped out my trading career at Scotiabank because what was I going to do? I was just going to be a trader, right? And remember when I told you people don't know what traders do? The same goes for when you apply to other jobs, all right? I had opportunities just when they say, oh, trading. So what do you do? What's your day-to-day? And nobody who applied with knew anyone from the trading side of the department. It was really interesting. And you kind of have to explain a lot of things, you know, and they'll say, oh, cool. Yeah. And you know what they would say? Like, oh, you trade. You're in an interview, by the way. Like you trade. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm a trader currently, blah, blah. Like, cool. What do you think of ABC stock on the Nifty exchange in India? I don't know. All right. Don't judge me because I don't know that. I don't care to know that. That doesn't ever make me money. So that's important. All right. That's kind of a lot of the reasons I went into ultimately what I'm getting to in this podcast, why I chose to left A little bit exhausting doing this solo, to be honest with you, but fun. I love it. I love challenges. All right, next reason or lesson that I learned from working at Scotiabank. You're mostly, as a trader, you're mostly a shrink for your clients. All right, you listen to their stories. Some are great. Most of them are extremely negative and bad energy. All right, they're complaining about losing money. They're complaining about, you know, how hard it is to invest. They're saying, how am I going to tell my wife I lost $50,000? I don't know. Maybe tell her why you lost $50,000. Start there. You know, that's a pretty good start. You've kind of committed to an open and sharing relationship with your partner. Start there. You know, say, honey, I lost $50,000, which sounds like a lot of money, but hopefully one day you realize it's not. All right. What's more important is what your self-worth is, which is unlimited. You are worth much more than money could ever pay for. All right. And so you're mostly a shrink for your clients, and that gets really tiring. All right. It's really tiring to continuously hearing people who are losing money, beating on themselves, beating on the firm you work in, and you. All right. So, like, oh, you guys on the desk are probably killing it. All right. And it's like, no, we're not. We're selling you trade ideas on one side of the business, and the side that I'm working on is taking your orders. So it's, you know, and 50% of these guys don't even trade. They just do them for you, get their salary, and barely break even on their own expenses. You know, they try to live so lavishly and live above their means. That's the reality of it. I saw it firsthand. And so I'm pretty sure some people are going to hate this episode, but you know what? It's the reality of the situation. All right. I worked there for a very long time. I met a lot of high up people. You know, I worked directly with executive level employees. And I could tell you, you know, I'll tell you the best advice I got from an executive, not mentioning any names at all or the years, said to me, George, what's your goal? And I'll tell you another story after that too. But this one goes, what's your goal? And I'm like, you know, I just want to work for myself. And he goes, perfect. He goes, go out and do that now. It's like, everyone in this bank is going to try to tell you how you're going to miss an opportunity, how the next step for you is going to be this. All right, I'm going to tell you this following piece of advice. It goes, do what your passion is telling you to. All right. Satisfy that fire in your heart. And if all else fails, you could always come back to the bank and pick up your career where you left off. All right. That was by hand the single best advice I've ever gotten from any employee. All right. Anyone in my 9-to-5 job. It wasn't my boss. All right. It was really a high up level employee. And I asked them, like, look, did you happen to kind of face the same situation? They told me, yeah. It's like, I didn't do it. I didn't make the decision to go trade for myself or work for myself, start the business. And now I'm an executive, but I can tell you that I'm not happy doing it. I'm doing it only because now I got to, you know, I got to pay the mortgage for the cottage. I got to get the toys. I got to, like, I'm chasing that life. I got to maintain a certain image with my friends. All right. And unfortunately, I can't ever do it again, because I have a family now. I have kids relying on me. I have a young kid, etc. You know, I looked at this guy that everyone in the bank kind of like idolizes, and I had a level of sadness for him. It was like compassion. It wasn't sadness. And I'll never forget those words. I said, go do what the passion in your heart is telling you to do. If all else fails, you could always pick up your career where you left off. It's like, if anyone tells you otherwise, they're lying to themselves and you. All right. Another thing that kind of was a realizing moment for me is, while I was at the bank, I remember having an opportunity. Like, I did some sales as well at a time, you know, and the sales aspect I did is I would travel around the country and I would educate advisors at the retail level. So instead of wealth management, if you go to a bank, like a local bank in your community, that's called retail banking. And so when you go in there, those advisors sell you mutual funds. And my goal was to educate them, to educate the client on what the benefit is of self-directed investment, lower fees, all right, the ability to control your own investment, the fact that no one gives a crap about your money as much as you do. All these things I was telling them, they're like, oh, man, you know, they don't care about that stuff. Like, they don't know how to trade, you know. And what they were really telling me is, I don't know that stuff. I'm not confident enough to tell my clients because I don't know it. And it was mind-blowing to me how little people actually care enough to manage their own money. All right. So what I would do is I would travel around the country and I would teach these retail advisors how to sell the product a lot better. And I really, from there, sparked a passion for myself. you know, to be like, look, I love teaching in this business, and this is how I'm going to reach people. But then there came a point where, you know, that tapped out as well. I found that the advisors in our bank, what happened was the incentive model changed, that we were no longer, the self-directed broker is no longer really one of the core offerings. Retail banking and deposits were kind of in the front, you know, the forefront of what the product offering was. They were always told to push deposit style products, which is like GICs, guaranteed investments, which is basically like cash paper bonds that pay interest rate, very low interest rate, tie up your money. So the bank could generate that cash to lend it out as a mortgage. There's always a reason. I remember talking with the VP of the lendings, of the deposit side, and he goes, oh, well, you know, we need to sell GICs. We need to sell people the idea of safety so we can generate money to lend on our mortgage side, right? And it was always about we need this. Like, what about the client? It's their money that's being put in the bank. You're there for them, right? That was lost on them. And I remember one of the VPs told me on the retail bank, it was, George, you know, what is your goal? Because you're a bright young man, you know, in 30, 40 years time, you could be doing my job. And I told the guy, unfortunately, I don't think I'd want to do your job today. All right. That got me in so much trouble. That went like right through the chain. My boss's boss's boss heard about it. And you know, it was the truth. All right. It was the truth. I realized I wanted to move forward with my career and do things for myself. Another story I have, this is an interesting one, is when I was working in the sales department, I was kind of doing deals with a pretty large size organizations to bring in money and set up their trading accounts. And one of them was this guy wanted to, I still have my license. Remember, I was a trader until the end of my career at the bank. And one of the guys wanted a $10 million rate on a fixed income product that we had ability to kind of massage and negotiate. And so we're sitting there. I have a discussion. I asked my boss. My boss goes, oh, you know, I'm going to have to get clearance. You know, you haven't put a trade in the last like 9 months. So like, you know, is the compliance good with it? Blah, blah, blah. And my SVP, my senior vice president, goes, George, we got to close this sale. So I go in there. I punch my code, S1A, boom, enter, book the GIC. All right. It was a huge dollar amount, and I ended up putting an override at the EVP level. So even my SVP was kind of like, ah, crap, this was over my own override. That was single-handedly the biggest authorized trade from our desk in one shot. But it was a product that we controlled. It's not like it went out on the market and like affected Apple, etc. Anywho, I have a lot of war stories. I could do an episode just on war stories from trading at a bank. All right, and the last one is, I'm going to do this really quick, because we're getting close to the end, and I'll tell you why I left. And very quickly, give you a quick list of things you could do on how you could succeed as a retail trader, you know, having learned how others have failed from a back-end perspective. So the last reason, or last lesson I learned, is that technology and systems that enable you and I to connect to markets are insane. They're very sophisticated. All right, you might just put in 100 shares long, hit submit, and you get a bing, like a little message. And you're like, oh, yeah, I own 100 shares of whatever it is that you bought. But behind the scenes, so much happens that no one appreciates. All right, how inner markets are connected. All right, the technology that routes these orders, the clearing process of it, the margin aspect. All right, the yellow queue, where orders that don't go straight to the market have to be reviewed. All right, there's so much, especially in today's market, so much complexity. And it's really kind of something I appreciate, because it's helped me build a career off of. And so you got to understand what you're doing might seem, oh, it's simple, but the back end process is extremely complicated. It's like a whole system of interconnectivity that we take for granted. All right, that's it. That's the lessons I learned. Not all of them. I probably learned hundreds of lessons, but I thought those were the most important. So here's why I left. All right, I had great moments. I love the team. We broke a lot of barriers during my time working at Scotiabank. You know, I started with a $32,000 salary and worked my way up to six figures. All right. It was over $100,000 bonus on top. In just 4 years, I doubled my salary, quadrupled my salary in 4 years with the bank. All right. I did extremely well in my career. All right. But even though I had a great team, you know, the role was fantastic. I was trading on the side on my own account, And that started taking more of my attention, all right, to the point that I'd be on the road and I'd be late to appointments because I'm putting in trades. And I'd show up to the appointments and the person who I'm talking to about trading has no interest in it. And I drove an hour to get there. And so, you know, it was really starting to eat at me from the inside. I love the people I worked with. You know, I actually love the business as well because I'm passionate about helping clients. That's my only real meaningful job I've had career-wise. I've been around the trading department of Scotiabank for my entire working career. Right, obviously cleaning toilets and stuff. That's kind of hustle money on the side. That's to pay the bills. It wasn't a career driver. But I really loved it. I loved the people. I loved the experiences. I loved my time there. But ultimately, I didn't feel like I was helping clients win. I felt like I was working for the bank. And I was working for the bank. But the bank works for the client. And I think somewhere along the way, we had forgotten that. All right. And that's kind of, I had an issue with that. Right, we weren't really helping people win. You know, a lot of them were losing their savings. We did deals for the better of the firm, but we didn't really work for you. I'm going to be honest with you. And I don't know if you're surprised, if you're somebody who you obviously have a bank account, but your bank doesn't work for you. Your bank's goal is to get your cash in their account so they could lend it for a mortgage. All right, they want to get deposits so they could loan them out. And they want to turn a profit and pay that to the shareholder. You are the profit source, all right? You are not the benefactor. And I don't think that should surprise anyone, right? I really wanted to do something for people, and I wanted to give people an opportunity to actually know, learn, and understand how their money works, right? And how to put it in play. And TradePro Academy, I think, is what I started that in 2012, by the way. I ran it on the side as a blog initially. Started out as gettingmarketmoney.com. But like, I really just want to help the everyday person. I think TradePro Academy is a stepping ground, but where we're trying to go from here is ultimately financial planning as a whole. I think teaching youth about financial literacy is very important, and we're doing that today. And we just really want to take it to the next step and to the next level. And I forever will always just want to help you, the listener of the podcast, the person who is interested to manage their own money, the person that works so hard, right, that pays the bills, that has the savings, has the courage to get up every day and do something they don't like just for their family. All right. I don't know anyone stronger than that person. All right. And so if that's you, I'm here to help you. You know, that's the idea. The idea behind all this is you're so courageous at everything else. Make your money work for you. That's the goal. Because anyone who tells you they know better what to do with your money is trying to sell you something. And I was there. I was on that side of the business, and I hated it. All right. Hopefully you guys are seeing that in the passion that we bring. All right. I want to help build an industry up of successful everyday traders. And I think in today's world, we've gotten a lot of attention on day trading, on, you know, managing your own money. And I hope that I'm delivering that to you with our team at TradePro Academy. Our goal is always to innovate and help shape the future of this industry. All right. Our top value at TradePro Academy, right, is we care. And I hope you guys get a sense of that in everything that we do. All right, here's a few things I can share with you on how to succeed as a successful trader from the failures of other retail traders. Join a community, be a sponge. The retail traders that I was doing orders for wanted to hide everything. Oh, what if my wife finds out I have a trading account? Your wife should know. It impacts her technically. What if my husband finds out I have a trading account? It's not a dirty secret. Right, this isn't like Ashley Madison. I'm pretty sure you're investing. You're trying to grow the money to use on your family. All right, join a community. Don't hide what you're doing. Don't have to tell everyone who doesn't understand it, but be a part of a team of people who have already done it before you that can help you. All right, and a team of people who do it successfully on a daily basis. Not people who pretend to do it, people who do it every single day. Join a team. That's going to be the most important part, and be a sponge. All right. And that didn't exist back in the day. Today it does. All right. Check out TradePro Academy for that. All right. Next thing is find a product that works for you. We've done an episode on this in our podcast. You don't have to trade FX just because a guy on Instagram you saw has a Ferrari that's probably rented. All right. And people with the most amount of money show it off the least. Always remember that. And so, you know, find a product that works for you. Don't follow somebody because they succeeded. Find what works for your schedule. What time zone are you in? You know, the capital requirements, the style of trading. Find something that works for you. We've done a whole episode on this, a podcast. Check it out. Number three, create a trading plan. If you don't have a plan, you're planning to fail. Simple as that. If you're not trading a plan, you're gambling. That ends really bad. All right. Step four, test it on a simulated account, but only short enough that you can understand what you're doing. Step five, trade live. Go to the live market as quickly as possible. If I have one mistake that I've done in my career is I've wasted too much time sim trading or pretending to trade. That's all you're doing. All right. So your sim results don't matter. And the faster you go into a live environment, the better for you. The less time to build negative habits and the more time or the quicker you jump into the real job. Trading sim isn't the real job. All right. It's trading in the face of emotionality and with real money. And what that does to you is what's important. All right. And then step six, review, adjust, and adapt. We're constantly changing. Like I told you, I read almost 2 hours a day in total. And you should also be looking for new ways to improve every single day. Trading isn't like any other career. You don't just show up, say, I have my degree. Let me sit down, give me a salary, and leave me alone. It's one of those things where today's success was yesterday's battle. And not even work ethic. It's a battle. Every day is a battle. So if you're willing to battle every single morning when you wake up, you know, and you're willing to fight through any challenge, if you're willing to develop personally, this is the spot for you. And you're going to constantly have to review, adjust, and adapt. All right. And last but not least, stay in a trading community, right? You might want to try out a couple, find out which one works for you. Everyone says, why should I choose TradePro Academy over anyone else? And I respond, you haven't really done too much research, have you? I encourage you to go do it. All right. It's like, you know, it's like, sell me on this. Come check it out. There's no reason that anyone needs to be sold in today's world. In today's world, if nobody's offering a refund or money back guarantee on their products, they don't believe in it themselves. All right. You just go out there, do your research, find out what works for you. And I think we got the best community in the world. We got a lot of successful traders, some of the new five-figure days, you know, and they're there every day. You can ask them, talk to them, get help from them. You're in the trading room with them on a daily basis. Check it out, guys. Come trade with us. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope I've given you a lot of depth on the lessons I've learned as a bank trader and ultimately why I left. All right. And you could implement a lot of this to become a non-retail client. Remember this. You are going to be part of retail, but you don't want to be a professional trader. You want to be a successful trader. There's a big difference in that. And I hope I've demystified the whole process for you and the inner workings. And you've got a better understanding of what people do on the professional side of the trading business. That's all I got for you guys. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend or a family member or someone you love to help them get started with managing their own investments and finances. Last but not least, if you love this podcast, we would really appreciate a review on Apple, iTunes. Tell people the reasons you like it, what you like about it. Anything that you're willing to say is helpful to us. We want to get the message out so we can bring in other traders as well that are interested and build our community together. Remember, when you're successful, it's about sharing and caring. All right. Success is not something you need to hoard. It's meant to be passed around. All right. Share a review with anyone. Leave us a rating on iTunes. And I can't wait to read them. I read them all personally. And I'm really excited to do that. Next episode, we'll have Marky back. Hope you enjoyed this solo cast. It's different. And I hope I don't have to do it too often. Love you guys. Have a great rest of your day. And thanks for tuning in. Take care. And I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.